I'm Molly Alter.
And I'm Brian Offit.
And together, we're the hosts of Hands On, a new podcast from Index Ventures.
Hands On is all about giving listeners an authentic look at how startup leaders drive success, growth, and strategy.
Like picking something up and examining it from all angles, with Hands On, we look closely at what it takes to build companies, careers, and relationships.
We've got a lot of experience in this arena, but it's really our guest stories that shine brightest.
And it's our privilege that they so freely share their treasured insight and hard-earned wisdom with us.
And you, our listeners. So now, without further ado,
let's get into it.
Alrighty, folks. I am really excited to be joined today by my good friend, John Gleason. John is a Canadian surfer, which is a pretty rare thing to find. He's joining me from the North Shore of Hawaii right now, living the dream down there, someone who definitely follows his dreams, having moved there immediately upon COVID hitting. John and I have known one another for a couple of years now and have become quite close friends. He's one of the most empathetic leaders that I've ever had the good fortune of meeting. He's been at Keep Truckin' now for quite some time. He's the VP of customer success there, starting with the company when they were at just $1 million in ARR, all the way to today where they have close to 100 people on the customer success team globally and over 1,000 customers. So really excited to dig into how to think through
100,000 customers.
100,000 customers. Even better.
Yeah, 100,000 customers. Yeah.
How to build that sort of customer base. John's also runs the customer success meetup here in San Francisco. That slowed down a little bit before COVID, but prior to COVID, that was quite a thriving community as well. He started an ice hockey school. So much to talk about today. And John, thanks so much for joining.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. It's fun to get this recorded because we often meet once a month and just, you know, talk through everything that's on our minds. So it's fun to share those great conversations with the world.
Yeah, a little bit more formal version of what we already do anyhow. It's the best kind of podcast, right?
Exactly.
Well, John, one of the things that we don't do in our normal catch-ups, but we do on this podcast, is to kick off with some icebreakers. And we have a kind of a whole slew of rapid fire questions that we like to ask people. And so the one I want to ask you, given your kind of varied interests and your just fascinating kind of life story from Canada to where you are today, you know, who was your childhood hero growing up and how has that influenced, you know, where you are today? Was it a surfer, an ice hockey player? What?
Yeah, it was. So my backstory is I grew up, you know, about as far from the ocean as you can get in Ottawa, Canada. And my first love was ice hockey. I played up until college. And so my hero was Steve Yzerman. I loved Steve Yzerman. For folks who don't know, he was a longtime captain of the Detroit Red Wings. But I always liked him because, you know, he's certainly a superstar, but he was very, very humble. And always, I think, like willing to take one for the team. He transformed his whole playing style from like the goal scorer through to like a defensive specialist. And so maybe there's something in there, right? Because, you know, a lot of people, when they join like the go-to-market motion of a startup, they join on the sales side. I did join on the sales side. It's fun to score goals on the sales side, but I've kind of found my stride as, let's say, the defensive specialist, which is in customer success. So making sure that all of maybe the pucks stay out of the net. So that was my hero growing up, but I haven't even put on skates in over 10 years now. So a distant memory.
Oh, wow. You moved the skates for the surfboard.
Exactly.
A bit of a different, I guess you're, in both cases, you're on water of some form or fashion. So I guess that's the consistent theme. What would you say your spirit hockey position is today?
Probably actually goalie, because customer success is, you know, you want to keep the pucks out of the net. And usually, you know, it's a very, very important part of the team. You know, you look at like a SaaS business and so much of your committed ARR comes out of your existing install base. Usually people don't worry about you too much until you let a goal in. There's a big red light over your head and everybody wants to know what went wrong. So definitely, yeah, a goalie. I feel like a hockey goalie most days. Nobody's paying attention until one slips in.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You don't get credit for the 30 saves. You only get in trouble for the one that went in.
Exactly, right?
And sometimes you're taking it right in the face mask, but as long as it doesn't go into the goal, that's all that really matters.
All that matters.
So a good transition, John. You know, we mentioned that stat at the beginning, growing the customer success organization from, you know, 1 to 100,000 customers. That's quite a lot of saves, right? And you're also working with a really interesting customer base, right? Because it's a little bit different than, you know, a lot of organizations and tech companies in Silicon Valley that have customer success groups sell B2B software to largely other startups, other technology forward companies. Whereas with KeepTruckin, you're selling to a pretty different customer base, right, than sort of your average startup. So you're someone who has really varied life experience. How do you think your upbringing and life experience has influenced how you approach establishing relationships with such a wide variety of different folks in your current role?
Yeah, for sure. Well, one, like I love the problem that we're solving at KeepTruckin, right? We're bringing technology to basically a market that has been pretty underserved by technology. And so I guess like first and foremost, I just love connecting with our customers. I definitely have done the B2B SaaS selling software to software people before. And it's fun to get on a plane to London or New York City or San Francisco. And those are great places to go. But the thing that I've appreciated most is like when I do get on a plane, I'm going to all parts of America. I've been to places that I never imagined going before. And so I definitely feel like I have a connection to a lot of the folks that we're selling to. I came from a pretty small town in Canada. My cousins had a dairy farm, so I spent a lot of my time, out in the country. And so I kind of feel at home when I go to, the middle of America and we're solving a real business problem for this business. So I think a lot of, again, like customer success staples go into that, having a deep empathy for your customer, listening, understanding their business. So that certainly translates. And then other things like have just like got completely, thrown out the window from even like mediums of communication, where you deliver a message, knowing that a lot of times your stakeholder could actually be out of pocket. They never get behind the screen of a computer. So yeah, it's been fun actually overall to just have this customer base that, you feel like you can connect with, feel like you can do something meaningful for them in their life, and then also test everything that you thought you knew about customer success and translate that to an industry that maybe, has never seen an EBR before or some of those like standard customer success playbooks.
Yeah, yeah. So transitioning a little bit, John, something that's related to what you were just saying, and I think is one of the really standout characteristics of you and your personality is, building relationships in general. Right. And I think the theme of the podcast is called Hands On because it's about people building things. And what that thing is, we're taking a very broad approach, right? It need not be a software product. It need not be a product at all. It could be just building relationships. And so you touched on that a little bit with regards to how to build relationships with your customers as a customer success person. But you're someone that's done this extraordinarily successfully kind of across the board. You've built this community of customer success folks alongside some other leaders. You're someone who everyone that meets you just really likes you. So, we've become good friends. Mark and Mark here at Index love you. Shardul loves you. And it's a real strength of yours. So, these things can be hard to make concrete because some of it is obviously nature and the nature of your personality. But I'm curious if there are particular things that you think about when you're trying to build relationships with new people in general, whether they be customers or otherwise, that could be strategies that you've seen be successful that perhaps some of the listeners could apply when they're trying to meet new people. Because, networking is kind of an awkward thing, but it's something that you do in a very genuine, natural way. So I'd love to talk through if there's any advice that you have, myself included, because you're much better at it than I am.
I think like the thing is, I'm just genuinely curious. I think overall, I'm just like really, really curious about a lot of different things. So I think I approach relationships with that curiosity. I think also I probably have a lot of self-doubt sometimes. So I appreciate feel some days like there's so much I don't know. I don't even know what I don't know. And so every relationship, I kind of approach it with, hey, here's an opportunity to learn something that I don't know, to kind of inform an opinion about something that I'm really curious with. And I'm always kind of overwhelmed by how generous people tend to be when you approach a conversation or a relationship with that genuine curiosity and how willing people can be to help. Heck, even when I got into customer success, I'll tell you the story of where I learned about this networking piece. So backstory is I was the first hire at a startup. And I wanted nothing more than to work for a startup. I was in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. And I was reading like Fast Company and I was starting to go on Twitter and I heard what people were doing in Silicon Valley. And I was just like, I want that experience. I want to be part of a startup. So I joined one of the few startups in Halifax as the first hire. I got to help the first product and then helped sell that product because that was a skill set, helped build the first sales team. And then they said to me, hey, you're going to figure out customer success. And I like did not want to figure out customer success because you start to get a sense of what sales is like. That's really exciting. You're closing logos. You start to see your paycheck and it's getting pretty good on the sales side. They're like, hey, you're going to figure out customer success. So I said, okay, cool. I'll do that. So I went on LinkedIn and I just searched VP customer success. And I just reached out to anyone who had that title and just said, hey, I'm curious, like, here's the problem. I'm just figuring this things out. Like, would you spare like 15 minutes and just approach that learning from there? And so, you know, some people don't respond to you. That's cool. And some people respond to you, they help you. And then you ask more questions. And next thing you know, you have a lifelong friend. So that's probably like how we met too. Actually, we met through Shardul, so a partner at Index, and I was just genuinely curious to learn what best-in-class customer success looks like and if there was anybody in his portfolio that was really great. And so got connected in that way, and then he connected me to you. And so you start to go down these rabbit holes, and I think if you approach relationships with a lot of authenticity, people appreciate that. It's kind of cool. Like there was no like grand scheme as to why I was building relationships. It's more just to learn. And then you start to meet people along the way. And then there, you know, I feel grateful. There's so many people that helped me that now I try and connect people where I can, if I know somebody along my journey who can help that person, you know, seeking out some information or has that same curiosity.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I think sometimes when people think about network, they try to over-engineer it. And when you're over-engineering it, it's hard to build a relationship that is calculated, right?
And I think like short term too, people often like you see this with job seekers. It's like, you know, somebody is looking for a new job, all of a sudden like they go and start to network. And I think it's like a lifelong pursuit. Like we're all in this industry. And so, you know, there might not be an immediate outcome to that relationship, but you know that there's a shared way that you can help each other and some shared value and just like approaching that long game.
Yeah. And to use your hockey analogy, if networking is about putting shots on goal, you got to put 30 up before one goes in. And some people, you'll in some ways be unsurprised that a lot of people might not respond to your request. But my observation from my personal experience is for the people who do respond, you'll be very pleasantly surprised with how generous they're willing to be with their time.
Yeah.
And it can be scary, I think, in particular, when you get a bunch of people who you reach out to who don't respond, and that's fine. Right. But viewing the people who you do connect with as not just a point in time connection, but someone that, you know, you're going to build a relationship with over a long period of time is not only a very effective way of going about doing it, but it's also just a more enjoyable way of doing it. Right. Because you develop meaningful relationships with these people as opposed to transactional ones, which is a much more enriching way to spend time with people.
Yeah, big time. I couldn't agree with you more.
Awesome. We're going to take a quick break here, John. I'm really excited to continue the conversation when we come back to talk a little bit more about, you know, we talked about the substrate of community, which is individual relationships, but how you've applied that to building teams, communities, and larger group organizations. So we'll be right back in a minute. All right, folks, we are back here with John Gleason. Earlier in the podcast, we got to talk about some of John's earlier career and upbringing growing up in Canada, working at a startup, his approach to networking and relationship building. I'd love to jump into what you're doing today, John. So you're at the startup. We talked about that a bit. You were getting introduced to customer success. Now you're Keep Trucking. You're the VP of customer success there. You run a very large team of people. But maybe before we get into how you think about team building and community building, let's go back to the beginning. Can you tell the audience a little bit about how you ended up at Keep Trucking and where that journey began?
Yeah, for sure. So when you join an early stage startup, and I really felt like I was as a founder at that company, but after about 4 years, I realized maybe it wasn't going to grow to, you know, that hyper growth that I was reading about. And I was really, really craving that. But because like the team and the founders had invested so much in me, I thought you can't just leave for any company. You better make sure that it's, you know, the right company to leave for. So that's when I actually got into just like studying like venture capital. I kind of thought to myself, okay, I don't have $1 million to invest in a company, but what I do have is time. I have time and I've got 4 years standard vesting, but maybe longer. So let's pick a winner. And so I, got my Crunchbase account set up and I set up my daily report. Every company that raised a Series A, that was kind of where I wanted to learn from. I would just follow them. I would do my diligence on them. And when a company came along that I was really excited about, I'd go through kind of all that standard early stage VC diligence. And so Keep Trucking popped up on the radar. I had some shared connections into the company, started to learn about it at that point. Like I said, it was $1 million in ARR. But what was really cool is they had $250,000 free users of their app that just like loved what they were doing. These were truck drivers on the front lines. So there's clearly like some market pull there. And then on top of that, there was a government mandate coming saying that everybody in America who drove a truck needed a piece of hardware to track their hours of service. So for folks who don't know what Keep Trucking does is, you know, now it's really an information of things company. We put a sensor in a truck, on trailers, dash cams, video cameras. But at that point, it was really just bringing this industry online for the first time. So I thought, man, if these two things collide, these free users who love this app and this government mandate, instantly we would be a pretty big thing. So got to know the founders, checked all the boxes, people that you could just see very, very passionate about it, the skill set to grow this thing as big as they possibly could. So all that came together and that's how I found my way at Keep Trucking. I kind of willed my way into the company once it was in the crosshairs as a company I wanted to work with. I said to Obaid, who's one of the co-founders, like, I don't really care what the role is. I just want to be part of this thing. I love what you're building. And that's worked out pretty good. Got to touch a lot of different parts of the business and customer success and been able to grow at the speed that the company is growing at. And well, actually probably rise at the tide that the company is going. I always think that all boats rise with the rising tide. So I'm definitely lucky there.
Yeah. And I think, you in passing touched on a real nugget of career advice, actually, which is find something that you're excited about and just be willing to jump in to help out with whatever is most valuable. And being open to, you mentioned this in your previous job too, right? You were doing sales and you're like, someone needs to run customer success. And you were like, well, this isn't necessarily exactly what I wanted to do, but you jumped in and owned it. And I think that's actually a great piece of general career advice for people who are trying to advance their career and learn more. It's just being willing to do the most important thing, even if it's not the most fun thing. That's a real nugget of wisdom.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you gotta figure out a way to make yourself invaluable in some way.
Yeah.
People appreciate that.
And you've come a long way since then, right? So now you're running these large teams, and we touched a little bit on relationship building in a one-to-one sense earlier, and that's obviously kind of the foundation of team building, right? It's a series, a graph, if you will, of one-to-one relationships. So for continuity, how do you think about team building? What do you take from relationship building that's the same? What additional things do you add on top? How have you thought about that in your role as someone who's grown from an individual contributor all the way up to a VP, which is a pretty amazing run?
I think I'm still trying to figure it out, to be honest, because like in the early stages, when you have a small team, you can be on that true like one-to-one relationship. You have one-on-ones with everybody. You can share your vision for how we're going to build things individually. You can capture a lot of feedback, both in group settings and again, in one-to-one settings. And so I think like the biggest challenge is if you're good at that and your people, believe in you and your team believes in you at that stage, sometimes there's actually a little bit of tension as things start to grow and get bigger because, my team now next year will grow to 150 people. There's not even time in the week for everybody to have a 15-minute one-on-one. So you have to figure out ways to kind of scale how you communicate with the group. You have to, hiring becomes really important. Your directors, you might not be able to invest time at the IC level every day, but if you can really get on the same page as your directors and you can coach them and encourage them to build relationships with their people. So you have that great anecdotal feedback that flows up. And if you can provide like to your team, like, well-planned meetings. I think meetings are really, really important with opportunity for questions, and all these things add up. But I have to admit, I'm still learning how to protect my time so I can also do like all of my work while still gaining that great anecdotal feedback that comes from the front lines, while making people feel like they're connected to our mission, to our goals, feel like they, you know me. So all of these things come together. So we do like, you know, all hands, we do kind of ask me anything sessions. For a while, I would almost be like a pen pal with the team during COVID. I would send a weekly note to everybody, just like what I was thinking about. You know, we've done, you know, book clubs, things like that. So you really just have to find those scalable mediums to have like a personal connection with your folks, and vice versa. You want to make sure that not only the data, which you can get out of, you know, Salesforce and Tableau and things like that, but that anecdotal feedback to add color to it can flow up.
Yeah. Yeah. And you touched on something that I'd love to dig a little bit deeper into, because I think you're someone who is very genuine and honest about not just the things that have gone well that you've learned, but also the challenges. And I think the challenge you described of figuring out how to manage large teams is very common, right? Like, I don't think it comes naturally to anyone to run an organization of 150 people, right? Like, it is a difficult, odd, in some ways awkward thing to have to do, to manage this large group of people, some of whom you actually don't know that well. It's very challenging. And I'm sure there's many people listening to this that are maybe not even managing teams of that scale, but just are managing teams of some scale for the first time and struggling with the, like, how do I manage these relationships? How do I think about them? So I'm curious, through your journey, what are some of the challenges that you've experienced with stepping into this role that, like I said, is not particularly natural to anyone? And do you have any advice or learnings from your personal experience that you would share with the rest of the group? Or I guess the audience, I should say.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, like where to even start? There's so many things that I didn't even want to learn and had to learn on the fly. I think like the most challenging thing, well, I think like the key probably to all of the scaling is, you know, sometimes people say like, don't take it personally. But I think there's elements of it that like you really do take personally. And I think it's okay to take things personally. And, you know, a couple years ago when COVID hit, we actually had some layoffs at Keep Trucking. And that was like one of those things that I really never wanted to learn how to lay off people or how to go through that process of figuring out, you know, where cuts could be made or where they couldn't. Some people on the other side, you know, obviously they probably don't want anything to do with me, but others I've, you know, kept in touch with and they've been friends post. And I think in doing that, like, again, just going back to authentic, like it was, I remember the day that we had to do that. I ran up and down the stairs multiple times, actually like in tears, because I learned, hey, what was happening. And so I guess like that was an opportunity where like maybe the easy path wouldn't be to be entirely transparent or to show your weakness. But there was a lot of people in, you know, in sharing that news that I definitely showed my weakness to. And I think they were going through a really hard time and they knew that I cared deeply about them. And I think that's like, again, something I didn't want to learn. But sometimes like if you do take it personally, people know that there's an authenticity that you care deeply about people. And those are things that, again, like when you play the long game, people maybe come back to your organization or they want to work for you again, or there's a referral that comes in. Or you go surfing with them one morning again, and that was somebody that you had to, you know, lay off. So I think like, yeah, just being authentic and maybe like, you know, care deeply and take it personally.
I think that's great leadership advice. I think sometimes in difficult situations, and I've run into this issue myself as well, you want to have a scripted conversation because you, as the deliverer of the bad news, are nervous or uncomfortable with the conversation. And so you want to go in with what you want to say. And I think what I found is that it's good to have a loose script, but it feels much worse for someone to receive what they feel like is a manufacture. I mean, it's very similar to what we were talking about with relationship building. If it feels, or networking, if it feels manufactured and calculated, it's much more difficult to receive versus an imperfect but authentic response.
I completely agree. I always go in with my notes, you know, because I want certain points to be top of mind. And then as soon as rubber hits the road, I refer to them, but really, you know, make it natural if you can.
Yeah.
Even when we first started meeting, I would come, for folks who don't know, I would, you know, go over and visit Brian at the index office, and we would, you know, book out this corner room, and we would sit and we'd just have a long chat. And I would always have a notebook. There was always things that I wanted to pick your brain on. Sometimes we never got to them, but because it was natural. But yeah. Definitely be prepared, but be willing to go off script. And then there's certain like contexts too, like where you really do have to be to the script well. So know when those opportunities are present. But having that gauge is important too.
Yeah. And a lot of relationship building happens in the margins. It's the thing off the script where you're talking about something that is potentially not relevant at all, really, to the original intent of the conversation. Where you're like, okay, we were going to talk about customer success, and now we're talking about surfing or insert random thing.
Yeah.
But the relationship building actually happens in those margin moments, because you're getting to know one another as people versus purely professionally. And I think my perspective is that the foundation of any successful professional relationship, not always, but often, is a deep personal relationship.
Yeah, yeah. And it goes back to that curiosity piece, like just be genuinely curious, and everybody has a really cool life story that you can learn about.
Yeah, and people are infinitely interesting if you're willing to take the time to actually understand them and their background and where they came from. Speaking of which, nice transition. Interesting background on you that we've talked about a little bit. We've hinted at it during this podcast, but my co-host Molly was particularly interested in learning about. It was the question that she had for you going into this podcast. The hockey school, right? So we've touched on this. You started a hockey school. It was kind of your first entrepreneurial endeavor. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And in particular, I'd imagine you learned so much from that experience. I know we've talked about it between the two of us a little bit, so I'm excited to share that with the world. But yeah, first, I guess let's hear a little bit about that. And then I'd love to hear what you've brought from that experience into your current world, which is obviously quite different and also quite similar, right?
Yeah. Oh, where to even start on this? So when I was in my undergrad, I'd spent to that point in life always just caring about hockey. And I realized hockey wasn't going anywhere for me, but I wanted to stay involved. And I was working hockey camps. A lot of people work, you know, different hockey camps and coaching. And I kind of got clued into this. There was a lot of adults who wanted to learn how to play hockey. So there's like an insight into the market. So maybe there's, you know, a unique insight. So that's a learning. And I thought to myself, you know what, like there's really low risk in just like trying out if you could build a hockey school. You got to book the ice and you got to find 20 people and instantly you can have a business. And I learned I could cancel the ice time if I didn't get anybody to sign up. And so I just thought, okay, I'll book the ice. And if I can get 20 people, we'll do this thing for 10 weeks. And if we can't get 20 people, well, I'll give them their money back and we'll cancel the ice. And that was a fun experiment. So maybe lesson number two, just be willing to take a small risk, do tests, see if there's an opportunity there. Well, anyways, we got like 20 people signed up. They told 20 people. And next thing you know, we were running like sessions every day of the week for all these adults who wanted to learn how to play hockey. So that was pretty cool. I guess the next insight was that was going really well. Definitely didn't like want to spend the rest of my life in a hockey arena. Learned that building businesses was actually really fun. I spent more time, you know, figuring out how to charge people online. This was a long time ago for the hockey school, build the website for that and do some marketing. That part was really fun. Spent less time probably actually designing the lesson plan, started to get people who were way better at hockey and way better at coaching than me to run the business. And then I thought, man, if this thing works with me, you know, not doing a lot of the coaching, I'd probably go away and do my MBA and the whole thing will run and it'll fund my MBA. So the next thing was like, hey, like take a risk. If it all blows up, well, you didn't invest any money in it, it all blows up. Well, that went pretty well. So I was out in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, doing my MBA. The hockey school was running. It was paying all the bills. I was actually, you know, making pretty good money as an MBA student. Fell in love with surfing, because you can surf in Nova Scotia. And I thought, dang, man, if this thing works with me running it remotely. It probably work remote from anywhere in the world. And I booked around the world plane ticket. And I went on like a year long surf sabbatical running the hockey school from anywhere in the world. So it was like the total Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week type thing, which that was the compelling story that when I came back, that story got out. And that's what actually attracted the startup to me in the first place. So it all started with this hockey school. But along the way, yeah, learned how to work remote very early, run a business remote from anywhere in the world, which I now do as well. And yeah, there's very little risk in a lot of ways, like take small chances, calculated risks. And sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you don't get lucky on them, but you learn something along the way. So probably like my approach to just, you know, how I've been successful in my career afterwards has been around those same lines.
Yeah, I love that so much. It's the most amazingly Canadian story you could possibly have.
Yeah, exactly.
funding your MBA through hockey school is just, that's just amazing. The surfing part is a little bit less stereotypically Canadian, so, but that's pretty amazing story. And I couldn't agree with you more. It's like, take a risk and allow yourself to be surprised, right? Because I can't imagine when you started off building the school that you have predicted it would fund you surfing around the world. But if you don't shoot, you'll never score.
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take another quick break here, John, and then come back for a small last section of conclusions and roundups. I've got a few more questions for you. We do these exercises around crazy points. I'm very excited for that. But before we get into that, we'll take a really quick break.
Cool. Love it.
And we are back here with John Gleason for our last section of the podcast here. John, thanks so much for joining me and sharing all of the insight so far. One of the things we do on this podcast that is really fun is we do an exercise called Brands as People. So we'll take a brand or an idea and say, what would that person be like if they were a live human being? What would they wear? What would their personality be? Where would they live? What would they be interested in hobbies-wise? So, you know, we've talked a good bit about customer success, obviously, throughout this conversation. It's an abstract concept, of course, and there are many people that practice customer success that are all very different. But I'd love to hear, first off, you know, give the audience a little bit more context on customer success, what it is, how you think about it. And then if customer success was a person, what would they be like?
Okay, cool. Well, I guess like maybe going back to that initial theme of the hockey goalie, right? I think the customer success person is probably a lot like a hockey goalie. So if you follow hockey, you know that the goalie is actually kind of the weird person on the team, because you kind of got to be crazy to sign up for this job. And I think sometimes in customer success, we feel the same way. You kind of got to be a little bit crazy to sign up for it, because you end up actually having like a really, really broad set of skills that you have to be good at. You got to be good with the product, supporting customers. You got to be customer facing. There's a hard number attached to it in renewals and expansion. It's a lot. And sometimes like the weight of the world is on your shoulders in customer success, because like just the breadth of what the job can be and what it can mean. So in a lot of ways, it only attracts a crazy person like a hockey goalie. What do they look like? What are they wearing? They definitely have a couple scars. Maybe their helmet fell off.
Haggard.
And they took a puck in the face. I think every customer success professional has some scars around either a feature they couldn't deliver, a renewal that got away, maybe even like a really difficult customer. So definitely a little bit kooky in that way. But then generally everybody on the team, I think, does love the customer success person at the end of the day, because they can be the backbone of an organization. And it's actually probably like a segue into customer success and like why I fell in love with it, saying I started on the sales side. That's cool. But when you actually look at like the fundamentals of how a SaaS business works, you know, as things go on, there's this really incredible compounding of numbers that only happens when you have great renewal rates and when your customers do love you and they're willing to lean into that relationship with you and actually maybe trust more of their business with you. You look at like, you know, the great subscription companies and their net revenue retention is, you know, 150%, because people are willing to trust more of that relationship to them. So that's kind of how it all comes full circle. So I just think that's, it is the backbone. Great great renewals, great retention, great expansion is the backbone of great companies in the same way that a hockey goalie, you couldn't win a Stanley Cup without a great goalie.
Yeah, the unsung hero, you know. And to your point on everyone loving the goalie and the customer success folks, you know, there's no faster way to start a fight in a hockey game than to get the goalie.
Right.
You know, you can obliterate a forward or defenseman, but if you hit the goalie, you've got the whole team coming off of the bench. So
game over.
Yeah, totally. John, another question that we do here on the podcast is crazy points. This is the concept that whenever you're building anything, really, you kind of want a good portion of what you're doing to be kind of on the known happy path. People do it that way for a reason. And then you reserve some portion of your process for crazy points, which is where you get to do things that are a bit off the beaten path and do a little bit of experimentation. So I'm curious if there's a project recently that you can talk about where you've applied those crazy points and how you think about balancing that, you know, need to do what is best practice with innovating.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if I like can lay claim to this entirely, but one of the things that has helped keep Truckin scale and certainly my organization scale is we have a huge overseas presence. I've got close to 80 people in my organization who actually reside in Pakistan. So we've tapped into this incredible talent there, and we've given these folks who maybe came from a call center in the past actually like a true customer success responsibility. They own a book of business. They're responsible for the renewal, the expansion, the upsell. So that's kind of like a crazy point because, you know, most companies like maybe building stateside or building in San Francisco wouldn't have folks overseas doing this critical part of their business. So a crazy point for us is, yeah, invest in these passionate, smart people overseas. And in process, we've been able to deliver actually something pretty special to our customers in that they have a dedicated point person, and maybe they're a really small business and they're not used to having that dedicated point person, but they actually have that because of what we've been able to build. And yeah, in process, it works out good too. I've got a network of really cool people in PK who are now starting to build great companies themselves. So that's definitely a crazy point, something that's been a learning experience that Keep Truckin', but has panned out pretty well for us.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And we've actually talked about that a bit in the past. And I think it is one of the big competitive advantages of any business is figuring out where there's alpha and ways to do things that are different and interesting. And that's certainly something that we've talked a bunch in private about how beneficial that decision has been for Keep Truckin' as an organization. So I think that's a great example. Awesome, John. Well, thanks so much. There's been so much great insight here. I want to leave the podcast with one last question for you that kind of ties together a lot of what we've talked about. You've obviously had a real wealth of experience all the way from your first startup experience to starting the hockey school, traveling around the world. You keep trucking for quite a while now. So if you could look back a couple of years and give some advice, give one piece of advice to your former self, what would that be? Because I think that'd be a great thing to leave the audience with. And again, thanks so much for the time.
I would say like the advice would be stuff takes time. Meaningful stuff takes time to build. I think like when you're first getting started, 2 years or 3 years or 4 years seems like forever. But whether it's like building relationships, whether it's building a meaningful company, whether it's like learning the ebbs and flows that happen on that journey to a successful company, it all takes time. So I would say like to me, definitely like, hey, be resilient, stick it out. For people listening to that advice, I would say, you know, spend time getting to have a relationship with the company that you work with. Spend some time going through a couple different cycles. It's in the dips that sometimes I've learned the most. And then also the highs as well. You really appreciate what you've accomplished. So stick it out, be resilient, be positive, and good things do happen in time.
Great advice as always, John. Thank you so much for joining. It's great to chat, and it's great to finally have one of our chats out in the world rather than in the same corner room that they normally happen in at Index. So thank you so much, and here's to many more conversations.
Can't wait. Can't wait. Thank you for your time, Brian.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Hands On.
We always get so much out of these conversations, and we hope you do too.
Please be sure to stay tuned on your favorite podcast networks for upcoming episodes.
And don't hesitate to like, share, comment, or reach out.
We also encourage our listeners to follow us and Index Ventures social media channels like LinkedIn, Twitter, and TikTok to stay up to date on the latest investments and initiatives we're supporting. Hands On is a production of Index Ventures and Studio Pod Media with Justin Berardi producing. I'm Molly.
And I'm Brian. Thanks.
Yes, thanks from all of us at Hands On.
Keep the ideas coming.